He turned to me and he goes, if you just show up and do your job well, you'll be so far ahead of everybody, you won't believe it. All right, so welcome everybody to another episode of the Billion Dollar Brand Podcast with Bill and Brian. Hello, Brian.
I'm so happy to be here. This is like one of my favorite things to do. I want to jump right in if we can.
Let's do it. Let's waste zero time.
You know, this podcast we have decided is for people who are building their brand, but also the people who want to build a billion-dollar brand because, Bill, you know, a billion is at least 1,000 times better than anything named
at,
a million.
At least 1,000 times better.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what we're all about. We're all about helping people build their brand or at least do a little bit of repair, course correction, or fixing if it needs fixing. And so we'll be breaking down some of our stories and also maybe talking about case studies and tips and tricks. You want to start off? What did you bring to the table?
You know, the thing that I want to talk about today is how much everybody talks about wanting to be a billion-dollar brand, but then how much they stand in their own way to do it. Oh, it makes me absolutely nuts.
Why do we
and
do
I
this?
I might say that this was inspired by somebody the other day that was actually a client. I might say that. I might not say that, but I might say that. The day that was actually a client. I might say that. I might not say that, but I might say that.
Okay, allegedly.
Could be
a client story.
I'm not saying that it happened. But when you go into businesses, the first thing that you hear when they're talking about brand is that they want to leverage brand to be a pathway to scale. Like, that's why would you do it, right? And we're just coming out of Super Bowl season, so everybody was gathering their popcorn and sitting and watching the Super Bowl spots and rating them and ranking them, which, by the way, is proof in and of itself that people will watch advertising. Mm-hmm. But what is so...
Guilty.
But what is so funny about that to me is that brands will see that and they'll come away from an experience like the Super Bowl, and then they'll say to their agency, okay, I'm ready. I saw some really cool work. I want to make some really cool work. Let's do it. And then you put the strategy together and they're like, yeah, the strategy is awesome. Yes, I'm behind it. And then you say, here's all the research and here's why and here's the campaign. And they go, yeah, that's great. And you say, here's the execution. We're going to start Monday. All of a sudden there's falter at the altar, right? Like, they get right up to it. And then I talked to my brother's cousin's sister's nephew who once had an internship at a place that did something like advertising. And they said, or my all-time favorite, I spoke to someone I trust and, or ooh, I'm not really sure if we're behind, or I talked to the CEO and the CEO didn't think it was cool. And it's like, would you go anywhere else in your world and do this? Would you sit down in the dentist chair and say, oh, I was reading on dentistmd.com that right, this is how you should inject yourself with Novocaine. I was thinking, could you just let me have a go at that? No, you don't tell people how to drill your tooth or how to fix your car or how to run cable in your house. But marketing is special.
Yes. The CMO probably went and was out like watering the hedges and talked to her neighbor, you know, like and got some feedback from the peanut gallery. Yeah.
I'm not really sure why that process happens. And almost uniquely so, I found that a lot of people say, you know, nobody questions a plumber. Like, nobody, they're like, oh, is that what I need? Okay, well, then that's it. And, you know, you drop your car off, which, by the way, you trust with your life. You know, you get in a car and you're like, hey, I need a brake job. You don't go wandering around behind the mechanic and say, oh, wow, did you put those pads on the right way? Because I was thinking that you needed another quarter turn on that bolt. No, you don't do that. You say, this is what I needed you to do, and they do it. But for whatever reason, when it comes to marketing, everyone's an expert.
Yes, although I hear you saying this and I'm nodding along with you, but also I feel like I'm being called out because I think I'm kind of guilty of doing this. I mean, I like to learn, and so I'm in a constant state of learning. So I don't think I do this with my mechanic because although we share this mutual love of cars, I'm not out wrenching on my car. And I know you are more skilled and more, I think you're handier than I am in this department, but sometimes I do question the professionals. So I'm guilty of that. I'll just have to say that right now.
But is that while they're doing it, or is it after you've received the so-called finished product?
Okay, I'll tell you just a quick story, so not to get off too far on a tangent, but like when my children, so I have a couple of children, just like you do, a few children, just like you do, when they were born, each one of them, I was right up in there in all the action, making sure that the doctor did not like leave a tool.
Forceps.
Yes. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, nothing happened to my child. I was very much right up in there, even asking questions like, you know, oh, not like in a bad way, like that doesn't look correct, but just like, why are you doing that way? Please educate me, just so I could understand, or maybe it would help with some of my anxiety. Who knows? But anyway, I was right up close to the point where some of these doctors and nurses were asking, are you a doctor? Are you in the medical industry? Like, you seem to know a lot. And No.
Sounds like the polite way of saying you couldn't really let us do our job, sir.
Yeah. So I maybe this is a bit of an indictment. So thank you for calling me out. But anyway,
wasn't an intentional call. But I think I think it's funny that, you know, people want proof of something that hasn't been proven yet, and that's not possible. You can't, you know, that's like saying, "Show me a car will work by rolling a wheel down a hill." Like, there's no way to say, I'm going to kind of maybe sort of see if it happens. I think the bold brands, the ones that really stand out and are able to grow, are the ones that aren't, let's say this, they're not so risk averse that they aren't willing to have an opinion. They're willing to say something different. They're willing to say something unique. They're willing to learn whether or not that particular type of execution worked to their advantage or not. Mm-hmm. But I find more and more as the, what I'll refer to as digital dependency, that's a term you're going to hear me use a lot, has come along. People have really shied away from that. They've shied away from the bravery that is required to arrive at a goal that's beyond where you are. Everybody's like, yes, I want to be different. But you know what we should do? We should maybe just not do that thing quite so much. And then that other one, well, yeah, let's back off on that. And before you know it, they've walked themselves right back to the thing that they were because it's what they're familiar and comfortable with. And then you look at the success of a Dollar Shave Club, a Liquid Death, a Poopery, you know, brands that were willing to go out and say something different and unique and kind of walk that hard line of edutainment, mm-hmm. and then they do really, really well. And then everybody lauds them, and they're like, oh my gosh, those people are amazing. Gosh, why can't we be like that? Well, the answer to why you can't be that way is because you're not willing to be that way. You know, you don't look like Arnold Schwarzenegger because you won't go to the gym. That's why. Mm-hmm. So that's yes. Like the big thing is, if you're going to grow and if you really want to grow, you're going to have to get uncomfortable at least a little bit. That's not to say you can't build on discomfort, but if you shun it all together, you're certainly not going to get anywhere.
I like it. This kind of reminds me of this other chatter that I'm hearing right now, which is this departure from where we've been for at least the last decade in performance marketing and returning back to brand marketing roots. Do you see this as a trend too, like on your side of the business?
I do. You know what? I actually think that this is, I'm kind of glad you brought this up because I do. I think that this is a huge renaissance. It's almost like brand has been rediscovered. It was kind of like the mid 90s came along, the internet happened, trackable banner ads. Whoever it is that invented the 728x90 banner, I'm coming for you. But who, you know, like for a long while, we got really, really wound up in that. And to the point where it was, okay, well, now we have to do digital this way, and then we have to do social, and then we have to do video, and then we have to, and then it like fragmented to the point where there was no story anymore. Well, there was no brand. Not
to be fair. And in their defense, all the performance marketers, I mean, I'm one of them. Like, I want to see results. Like, what is that saying? Like, whatever doesn't get measured doesn't, how do you complete the sentence?
If it doesn't get measured, it doesn't get cut.
Yeah. or, you know, it doesn't matter, right? If it doesn't get measured, it doesn't matter. So I understand, like, we're all doing things for a reason, for the result. But I feel like we've just sort of gone bananas. Counting all of these things, these metrics. I mean, yeah, I guess I get it too. In the same sentence, it's like if I'm spending, let's just say $1,000 on marketing, I want to know how many things I'm selling to do my ROI calculation for the money I've spent. You know, if I spend $1,000, did I make $1,100? Did I make $2,000? What's my ROI? I want to be able to calculate that. But I think we've gotten a little lost along the way and forgotten all about brand. And yes, I'm glad to kind of see this renaissance happening.
Yeah, I think it's really nice to see people sort of rediscovering it. And I think it's great. You know, I hear people talk about it in terms of long game, right? Like for a while here, we've been really focused on the short game just over and over again. It's really nice to see people coming around about it. What's interesting to me is watching them fumble through the learning of it the same way we all did coming up. I mean, I've got gray hair. So I've been through that phase of wrestling with, you know, what story should I tell? Why should I tell it? What story is going to be interesting? How can I tell it in a way that can be sustained for a length of time? You know, you look at Apple, their 1984 strategy was the same as their 1995 strategy for Think Different was the same as the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. That kind of strategic structure and fortitude is what allows businesses to build that kind of momentum. And, you know, there are a lot of other things that we're going to get right into watch. People will be like, it's not just about brand. No, of course, it's not just about brand. But when you have a brand juggernaut like that, that's able to create that kind of ongoing stability, it's rooted in something that is singular and is easy to pivot on over and over again. And I think the people who are coming into brand now are struggling the same way we did with how do you do something that's sustainable for 20, 30 years? When you put your strategy down, if it's, you know, we make the world's best pen, you're going to run out of stuff because other people are going to come in and they're going to, you know, be your competitive set. And that's going to erode some of that. So I think that there's a lot there. I'm super interested to watch it sort of re-evolve into the storytelling the way that I remember it. And I'm curious to see if they can get there. The truth of it is that I don't know that they can.
Yeah, maybe we should zoom out just a little bit and offer our definitions of brand. Like, what is a brand? This is the billion-dollar brand podcast after all. So how are we defining what a brand is?
Oh, you go first on this one.
I think a brand is a shorthand for who you are, what you stand for. When you think, you know, it's sort of like a gut check. When you close your eyes, can you imagine what the brand feels like, smells like, looks like, what it stands for? I think that originates in your creation, in the story you tell, in the experiences you create, but then it leaves your power and the power transfers to the person having the experience with you or with your brand. And then that interpretation lives in the hearts and minds, minds of other people. And so a brand is not your logo. A brand is not, you know, your mission statement. A brand is not, you know, the color scheme or the ad campaign as, it's a shorthand for who you are, what you stand for.
I like that. I've always thought about it as your reputation. Like if I say I'm going to go see an Eddie Murphy movie, I expect that I'm going to laugh. If I go to see a James Bond movie, I expect that I'm going to see Bond be Bond, right? Shaken, not stirred, and gadgets, and physically fit, and, you know, capable in any situation, and mother country first. Like, that reputation is what I think of as brand. And so I find it always interesting when folks confuse brand identity or brand tonality or, you know, other things with this notion of a complete brand structure. Like, what do you want your brand to stand for? When people say, oh, that's company X, what do you want them to want? You can't use that anymore, actually. Now X is taken. I mean, anyway, I digress. But I think as you think about what do I want people to immediately think and feel about the experience that's coming their way if they're going to be operating with our brand? That's how I view it.
Yeah. Here's another question for you about brand. So you mentioned Liquid Death, you know, and Dollar Shave Club, some of these more irreverent or that, you know, they have a non-traditional take on storytelling and brand. Can those brands also be serious? Because, you know, Liquid Death, their latest electrolyte, sort of like zombie apocalypse, Walking Dead style spot was really funny and entertaining. Can they also have a different tone? Can they be serious? Like, can they be comedian in? Can they be like, you know, Robin Williams, super funny, but then Good Will Hunting Robin Williams?
I think so, but I think you have to be careful about how you go from one gear to the next, right? You have to sort of do that shifting well, because if you're funny and then all of a sudden you turn to the camera and say, now for a real moment, right? You're going to lose everybody. But I think in the terms of Liquid Death, if Liquid Death came out and was doing something where they were serious about plastics, if they were serious about, you know, wanting to somehow aid the world in achieving something through, I don't know, water, clean water distribution to places that had no clean water. Yeah, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that they could logically get there because that's already the pond that they're playing in, and it makes sense. But I think it's when they try to be overly altruistic or self-serving that they lose everybody.
Yeah. Well, sidebar. So the new electrolyte packet, I haven't bought them yet or had them yet, but it seems like it's made of plastic. And their whole thing, Liquid Death, made of plastic. And it's like a little sleeve. It's not paper. It's like there's some plastic in there. So is that like being hypocritical?
I think those brands have a hard time when you run into the reality of it's sort of like folks that want to change the world to be environmentally better until they need to go somewhere and they realize that they can't drive a car because they don't want to burn any fossil fuels or.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's just a fine. I mean, and we're not getting into a political statement one way or the other, but my point is, I think that there's a fine line about where, like, the reality of how you conduct business runs into the reality of how people need to receive things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's well said. I interviewed Chris Anderson on my other podcast, and he talked about generosity. And it kind of reminds me of what he said, which is we'd all love to be perfectly generous, but it's just not possible. So imperfect generosity is just fine. Like, do what you can. And that's still making an impact, even if it's not like perfect. And as you said, you know, if we want to be, you know, perfect citizens of the world, we probably even shouldn't breathe because we're, you know, letting out some sort of, you know, carbon dioxide. Like we have a footprint, you know, like you couldn't eat or walk or drive or function. It's almost impossible to buy anything anywhere without it like infringing on some sort of, you know, strike, whether that's like the labor wasn't perfect or, you know, it was made in a different country, you know. So to your point, yeah, we try to just do the best we can. It's imperfect, yeah.
I think that's one of the places where the internet is actually an impediment to progress, because I think the people who have a tendency to be the most vocal on the internet are the ones that have the biggest opinion, pro or con, anything. And so a company that's overwhelmingly trying to do something good often gets a river of shit because they've done something that steps outside of the comfort zone of the people who are listening. And I think when that happens, woe be it to the brand who isn't able to duck quickly, because, you know, they're going to get, well, you did this one thing. And it's like, yeah, okay. But, you know, you lived a whole life. You who's sitting and pointing the finger lived a whole life that was imperfect as well. So before you go hurling that rock, you might want to think about that for just half a second.
That's maybe a good segue to someone I was thinking of, who's got a strong personal brand and I would think a very strong consumer brand, is Dave Portnoy. Do you know the Dave Portnoy story? We're talking about this a little bit off camera. What's your take on the Dave Portnoy brand, Barstools?
So I think he's done a really nice job of attaching to his base.
El Presidente.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's got the whole bro code thing down to a fine science, right? And I was watching the one where the guy comes out and Dave is either just starting or ending his video. I really don't know because I haven't watched enough of him. But anyway, the guy comes out and he was like, hey, I'm happy that you had the pizza like any other customer, but I don't appreciate what you're doing, making people like all weirded out about the fact that you're judging him. And his immediate response was to let loose a litany of fuck yous at this guy who was just expressing his opinion. And that, I think, is like right there what I'm talking about, right? His base was like, yeah, you know, and you could almost hear it through the video.
Hey, yeah, enjoy your pizza as any customer, but I don't appreciate what you do coming in and judging a business with one bite.
Well, Domineer, can I ask you?
Yeah.
What was his problem?
Let me be a little clearer. Move on. Don't stand in front of my business.
Let me be clear. Fuck
Let
you.
Me be clear.
Fuck
Get
you.
The fuck out of
fuck
front of my
you.
Business.
Fuck you. It's a public street, you motherfucker. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Police.
He's right across the street. Go get him. What are you going to tattle me off for? Standing on a public street?
Just being a fucking bitch.
Your shirt's six sizes too small, fatso.
I lose some weight. You're a fucking joke.
You work hard?
Yeah, maybe. My man, so full of shit, dude.
How? Tell me how.
Everything since I got in this business that you represent is an embarrassment.
Like what? Like raising $50 million for small
Everything.
Business?
Name
Everything.
Name
it.
Everything.
You haven't named one thing.
I make pizza. It's great.
It sucks.
You're
actually.
A fucking joke.
Name one thing.
You're a fucking
name
joke.
Name one thing.
Clown.
I love $1 million worth of game.
The best.
I like how Dom of the Year just slides right back in like mid-con.
Personally, as a Midwest boy, I was like, the guy didn't say anything but express his opinion. Like, did you really need to shout him back down into his pizza place? Like, was that the necessary thing? I would rather see that kind of energy aimed at another one of his videos that I saw where he was all ticked off because he'd waited 45 minutes for what in essence looks like a spray painted piece of cardboard. And that one, now I could completely get that. That's the one where he gave him a 0.1 because it was more headache to get a 0.1 than it was to get a zero, which by the way, I thought was pretty funny. But he just, you know, I would rather that he had walked back in and save that litany for what the fuck is this that I just waited 45 minutes for, then it was that he stand outside for a guy that was just sharing his opinion about it. So I don't know. I see it as good entertainment. Why don't we say that?
Yeah. Well, I'll play the other side of the coin, which is this idea that, I don't know, you have the right to say your opinion. I mean, Dave's out on a street corner, right? Like he's on public right. property. You could argue all the biases, right? Like, so it's just Dave's personal opinion on how this pizza tastes. I don't even like cheese pizza that much. I like everything on my pizza. I like vegetables and meat and all that. You know, like, I don't even think a slice of cheese pizza tastes that great anyway. I'd probably rate any pizza with cheese on it like a 2.0. but that's just my personal taste. But he is kind of... You know, he's leveling up from Yelp, right? Like, and there's been a lot of these like conspiracy theories against Yelp that they are sort of like organized crime where they sort of hold the small business hostage. And,
right.
you know, there's this score. And, you know, if you don't pay for your Yelp listing to get, you know, higher, then Yelp buries you deeper in the algorithm, et cetera, et cetera. I kind of tend to believe that. Like, I think in many areas of the internet, there is a pay to play. And we've seen that, you know, as Elon has taken over Twitter from the past regime, that there's been a lot of censorship and burying of, you know, truth, if you want to call it that, or at least someone's right to their opinion. So we know that there's some precedents that's been going on. But I think, you know, what Dave is doing is pretty cool because he's this guy who's, you know, built this multi-million-dollar brand, Barstools, from basically like a little flyer, newspaper, newsletter business into what it is. And he's unapologetic. You know, he's just being himself. And, you know, being this Boston kid who, you know, has roots, you know, at University of Michigan or, you know, now he's in New York and in Miami. And he's just being him. And I think that's why he attracts the kind of people that he does, whether that's the bro network, the bro code or the crypto bros, or it tends to be a lot of men or women who appreciate that kind of man. I think I like his authenticity. And you know, he's exactly what you're getting. You know,
well, I'll tell you what I do like about it. All the guys that taught me were out of New York. And the nice thing was is that you knew where you stood and it didn't last, right? If you screwed up, you were called on the carpet. you knew you screwed up, and that was the end of it. And so like that part of it appeals to me. And I really like the fact, just even bigger than that, that he's somebody who's willing to hold people accountable to a standard. Right now, it may be his standard, it may be a standard of one, but nonetheless, unlike everybody else, it's like, oh, it's fine. You know what I mean? he's in there and he's like, no, it isn't fine. Like, this is shit. And I'm taking the money that I hard earned to go do this. And if I'm going to do it, I expect something that's going to be pretty good. And so while I may not particularly enjoy, you know, his style beyond an entertainment thing, and this is what I was saying a minute ago, like berating the guy because he had an opinion, going back in and telling the guy that his pizza was crap, I'd have been all over that, because I think that that's missing from the world. I think a lot of people skate. In fact, I remember something that my dad said to me when I was young and I was like, I don't know, 15, and I was stressing getting a job. And I remember my dad, he turned to me and he goes, if you just show up and do your job well, you'll be so far ahead of everybody, you won't believe it. And for years, I thought he was nuts. I was like, you're out of your cage. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. And then after I've been in the work world a while, like, I got what it was that he was saying. For a lot of people, it's phoning it in. It's like, hey, the check cashed. I made it to my desk today. Like, you know, that's it. I'm working for the weekend. So in that case, or in that instance, I do appreciate what he's doing, because he's a voice out there that's saying, hey, wake up. Like, you know, it's not just another day. You're in it to win it. Let's do something.
Yeah. Yeah. What else you got? I got a bunch more, but what else you got?
The other thing that I read today, oh God, this drives me nuts. Maybe it drives you nuts too. Somebody was talking the other day about how they have a relationship with brands. I'm vehemently opposed to this. You don't call your favorite brand up and tell them about your new boyfriend. You don't call up and tell your brand that, yes, you know, your mom just moved to town, or that you need to borrow sugar, or hey, what's your best chocolate chip cookie recipe? That's a relationship. Like, that's people just being people. This whole idea that you have a relationship with brand is completely cocked up. I have no idea where this nonsense got started, but it's the worst kind of fairy tale, because yeah, you don't. It's a one-way relationship. Your feeling about the brand is based on your experience, and their story is based on what they believe. And if those two should meet, then that's great. And you have synergy, and you are relevant to the people and whatever. But you don't have a relationship with brands. And I just don't understand how people have even begun to say that that's the measure, because how in the world could you come to that conclusion? In what way possible, as we define relationship, do you have one with a brand?
So let me ask you this. So then, are like brand pages on social a waste of time? So, you know, we have a company Instagram page, and it's our brand, you know, it's the Reebok brand, or it's, you know, the NFL. Is this a waste? Should we just have our employees then, like, with their personal names and a little explanation of, hey, I'm the, you know, social media manager for this brand, or I'm the CMO of this brand. Should we just do away with brand pages?
Are you talking about in social, specifically social?
On social media, yeah, because you talk about having conversations. I mean, a lot of people are conversating, or at least engaging with brands via social. Could be TikTok, or I know you have a huge presence on TikTok, but you're showing up as Bill. You're not, well, what's your handle? Brand Boss?
It's Brand Boss HQ, but you bring up a really great distinction, and one that I think is important. Let's talk about where that is. That's social, right? And this is a big mistake that people make about the Brand Boss brand. It's not about me being a brand boss. It's about me helping people become a brand boss. That I'm irrelevant. I have nothing to do with it. And I think that's the whole point. My job is to help them get to a place where they feel like they're in a good spot. That's the whole thing. So when I think about whether brands should be on social, again, and we've already talked about them once today, but I'll give them some more plug. Liquid Death does a really nice job, because what they're doing is they're saying, hey, look at how ridiculous people are. Like, you know, I'd rather lick sweat off a fat guy's back than I would to drink your product.
Someone on the internet said, I'd rather lick sweat off a fat guy's back than drink Liquid Death. Introducing the Better Than Back Sweat Official Taste Test. We invited 10 real people and professional fat guys at Zacat Holmes in for a real taste test.
I'm going to have you try A first. Oh, I like those.
I love it.
That's good.
Well, let's go ahead and have you take a lick of B.
You want me to lick his back?
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Has anyone licked here yet?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, let's get that.
Oh, sweet Jesus. All right. Okay. I prefer A. Definitely A.
I'm good with this.
I'm gonna go with A.
I prefer A, for sure.
It's official. 10 out of 10 real people prefer the taste of liquid death over licking the sweat off a fat guy's back. Try it for yourself. See if you agree.
If you were to pour A down B, you'd have a margarita.
Yeah, that's a margarita.
Now, they actually have to deal with that stupid shit all day long, right? So there's a team of people that's sitting down on the 12th floor or whatever that's like, man, I have no idea what floor they're on. And they're like sitting there dealing with these idiot comments that come in all day, pro and con, right? But the con ones are the more fun to watch. Now, a lot of companies would do anything to avoid that shit. They would, you know, oh, please don't say anything bad about me. Oh, no, no. And part of the brilliance of the Liquid Death brand, which, by the way, they can get away with because they're calling themselves Liquid Death by putting water in a can, is to say, hey, we're going to embrace this. Like, this is real. And you may not want to think about it if you're a typical business owner, but we're going to wrap ourselves up in it. Okay, you think it would be more fun to, you know, drink the sweat off somebody's back? Let's find out. Like, yeah. You know, and that's fun, but that goes right back to edutainment. And somebody's going to say, what's educational about it? What's educational about it is this is what people have to deal with in order to be a public facing brand at that level. They've got to deal with these kind of criticisms and they have to be willing to deal with them, which goes right back to the bravery piece we were talking about at the beginning,
yeah.
Which is most brands have absolutely none of the stuff that's required to be great. They are not willing to be great because they don't want to put up with any of that stuff. But if
well,
you
scary.
Wrap
it's
stuff
scary.
Up in it, it can be strong.
Yeah, it is scary. I mean, especially if you're not the founder or the CEO. I mean, if you're the director of marketing or VP of marketing and you know, I can understand why people avoid the risk because it is risky. And if you get it wrong, and especially like comedy or talking about edutainment, it's risky. Let's face it. It's not easy to pull that off. Comedy is very, very difficult genre.
It is. Especially, it is for yeah. sure. That's interesting. What do you think about the idea that you need haters to grow? Because this points right into this whole thing. Like there's been it's really kind of fun to watch, but there's been a rash lately of people who are coming out online and being like, by the way, the people who like you are nice to have and we want to embrace them and send them free t-shirts. But the people who hate you are the ones that are going to do it. So you remember when the Bud Light thing came out, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's Bud Light.
The backlash for Bud Light.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So here's all this drama, right? And everybody's all pissed off about it. Yeah, da, da, da. All right. So I sat and I thought about it for a day or two. And then I was like, well, I'm just going to see where this goes. So this was a total experiment. But I went online and I said, here's why this was such a bad move. And I said, they turned their back on their base. Their base was Joe and Jane Americana in the backyard, like whatever, whatever. Didn't say anything else about it. Just put that out there. Like 750,000 comments later, you know what I mean? It's like, you're a moron. You don't understand it, man. You hate it. And meanwhile, I'm watching my followership be like tick, 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 tick. And that always reminds me of what, you know, they said about Howard Stern, right? The people who love him stay because they want to see what he's going to say next. And the people who hate him wait because they can't wait to see what he says next. And I think that, you know, you need some of that. So I think businesses are overly sensitive. Now, do some businesses truly step in it? Yeah. But by and large, most of them are so afraid of anything happening that they overreact before anything significant ever came their way.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point about, well, first knowing your audience, but also knowing yourself. So, I can't think of a specific example. Maybe it's like pacemakers. So if you're a pacemaker, you know, the kind that goes in your heart and if you have some sort of heart trouble, if you're the maker of a pacemaker, comedy is probably not your genre, right? Because like trust and like reliability, some of these like core values that align with how the patient or prospective patient feels about your product. Like they're already worried about their own health, let alone putting something that's manufactured, you know, that's not organic in their body, a pacemaker.
Yeah, sure. Example.
So like if you're thinking about, should we go down, should we take some risk and be like edgy or comedic? Maybe if you're one of these companies that requires that level of trust, or you already have a customer that's already nervous, maybe this is not the genre for you.
All right. But, so you brought up such – oh, I love this that you brought this up. Thank you.
But now, everything else is probably inbounds to consumer.
Well, now wait a second though, because I think you could do something really cool there. Now, you couldn't make this spot easily, but imagine that you had a guy that was just having the most strenuous sex ever.
Okay.
He's 70, right? And he stands up and he goes, "Woo!"
Matthew
McConaughey's off to the shower, dead. Off to the shower. Story? And as he walks away, it just says, "Our pacemaker is built to stand up to anything," right? Like, okay. You could, that's what I'm saying. And that's what Geico proved. Geico proved to all the people that were, you know, you're in good hands with Allstate. State Farm knows that you care about your dog and your fence and the tree in the neighbor's yard that might someday come. Oh, what? Bullshit. Come on. Nobody wanted that. And along comes a well-heeled gecko and some cavemen and totally upset the entire industry. And now all of them have followed suit. All of them who didn't have the cojones to go out there and say something unique and different, all of a sudden it's mayhem, and it's, we know a few things because we've seen a few things, and it's flow, and it's all the rest of that. All of that was made possible by Geico coming into that environment. So I think this goes right back to, there's an audience for everything. If you want to paint purple cows, there's a group of people out there right now that'll buy from you. Yeah, maybe a small margin people, but all I'm saying is that there's an audience for everything. And if, you know, if you wanted to get a pacemaker, wouldn't you rather get the pacemaker that says, I had marathon sex for 50 minutes and then did a triple backflip and, you know, stuck the landing before my shower, rather than the one that showed them happy at the home, enjoying just one more day of breathing? And there's an appropriate audience for both. Me personally, I'm going with option A. Like, I would rather all the way to the end. That's my brand. So yeah. I think that also says a little bit about the people behind the company, but nonetheless, that's my take.
You have convinced me, Bill. I love it. I mean, yes. And I think it goes back to this, this point that you were making about edutainment, that one of the biggest challenges we have today, if we're building our brand, is to stand out, is to be distinct or distinctive, right? And or else, I mean, maybe there is a drafting strategy. I mean, if you look at, not every brand, well, let's flesh this out a little bit. So I'm thinking about some of these more like boring hotels, like the, what I think of like a Hyatt or like even a Marriott, like they're ubiquitous, right? Like their whole strategy is to be everywhere that you are on at any time of day or night.
Rental cars are right there with them.
Yeah. They're not distinct. Mm-mm. They're ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's their message is all about like, I'm here for you. Like, we'll keep the lights on, right? Wasn't that like a saying of Motel 6 or something? We're here when you need us. We're everywhere. And we're affordable. So like just, you know, roll in versus being distinct. Like, let's say the Ritz-Carlton or something. What's your take on this? Does every brand need to think about being distinct?
It would certainly help them if they did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like anything else in the world. You want the thing you want because of the experience it will bring. And the more the experience is ubiquitous, the less value it has.
Yeah.
If every single sofa felt the exact same way, if every pen had the same writing characteristics, if every car you drove felt the same, who would care? Yeah. And for whatever, here's what happens though. And this is like a big thing that we push on, is the hallmarks of commodity thinking. When you join a company, you start drinking the company bathwater, which is, We have a better product. We have better people. We work harder. We care more. That, like, I don't care what company you go into. This is the mantra in the hallways. Oh, man, our people are the best team ever, ever. And you're like, wait a second, didn't you work down the street at a competitor like 5 years ago and weren't they great? But no. But this, but Bill, this team is different. No, it's not. Yeah. Those are table stakes. Of course you expect that you're going to think that you hired the best people. Oh, yeah. I hired really shitty people to make a really crappy product. Said no one ever. So of course you think that. But the thing is that like it's such a part of our culture now to find solace in that. Like, we don't have to be unique because our product is good and our people are good and we care and we work hard. Mm-hmm. Who would buy a product from a group that didn't? Like, that doesn't any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so maybe this is another data point on knowing whether or not you have a brand. So if what you have made, if the story you're telling is distinct, then you probably have a brand. If you don't, if you're part of the herd, if you can't identify which one is which from the mass, you probably don't have a brand.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there was a time that Wendy's was distinct. Like, back when they were doing, you know, the whole, you know, that's a very big bun, right? Where's the beef concept? Right. They were actually different. They were unique. And not just because of the square burger. Like, that was the catalyst for it. But now, take a look at the difference between Wendy's and Burger King. I defy you. And the only reason McDonald's is different at all is because they're running a campaign that's actually making some kind of – I mean, it's an embarrassment to even say that that's going somewhere. But it's at least in your face, I guess. So at least they're buying their visibility at the party. There are 9 people wearing a McDonald's jersey at the party, so at least you know they're there. I mean, I haven't seen anything done – by Burger King that lasted in a while. The Whopper, the moldy Whopper thing was cool. And, you know, they've done some stuff. But by and large, as a brand, they disappeared. Wendy's is the most lost, used to be cool kid at school. Like, Wendy's needs that bumper sticker that the soccer moms wear, put on the back of their minivan that says, I used to be cool. That's what Wendy's needs at corporate. Like, I wish someone would put like a 40-foot wide, we used to be cool sticker on the front of them, because I don't think they know. I don't think that they know how much they suck. I don't think they know that when you go into a Wendy's now, Wendy's blows goats. It's the worst experience ever. Like, you go in, those people don't care. The food is awful. Like, and it used to be so cool. Wendy's was so cool. What happened?
They have a smart social media person at the on the keyboard. Have you seen any of the social media stuff?
No, I've got to say that they've been so off my radar ever since they stopped being cool that
the product is terrible, but the social media marketing is on point, because there's a lot of clapping back and there's a lot of good little snappy comebacks. So whoever's at the keyboard of Wendy's online is still at it. But
I'm glad you know that.
Well, anyone at the store level, I agree. The food is trash. The experience is terrible. Yeah.
Well, and the marketing is bad. I mean, the television marketing, the radio marketing, like, they used to be funny. Like, go back and watch them again. They're still funny now. Now, the ideas were funny. I mean, I saw a Pepsi ad the other day that I'd forgotten all about, where the kid sucks himself into the bottle. Still funny. Like, still today funny after all these years. Or the Sprite campaign where the 3 guys are talking about how tough they are, and then the director yells cut, and one of them's like, what's my motivation? And the other one goes, once again, you've ruined my concentration. And they're like thespians. Like, it's just hysterically funny. And the whole idea about image is nothing. Like, those were real stories. Those were real points of view and attitudes about what their brand was and what they were trying to say. Very few brands today have that.
So let's stay on QSR. Let's stay on McDonald's for a second. I was reading something in Adweek. The headline reads, McDonald's caters to anime fans by bringing a fictional restaurant to life. The global campaign by Wheaton and Kennedy, New York, includes a web series, immersive experience, special packaging, and limited time sauce. is this a good idea? McDonald's giving anime and manga fans a chance to visit a fictional chain. Looks like WC Donald's, WicDonald's, with a campaign kicking off February 26th in more than 30 markets around the world. The article says something like, an obvious riff off the Golden Arches, WicDonald's, WC, has appeared in many memorable shows from anime and manga for decades. McDonald's is tapping into the meme by hiring manga artist Aki Bright, I don't know if I'm saying that right, to create limited edition packaging depicting characters who will also appear in the brand's own anime web series. Thoughts on this?
I don't know that I have any yet. I think I'd have to see more about it, but my general thought about the metaverse, the augmented virtual digital reality spaces, I don't think Gen X is going to get into it. I mean, I think maybe Gen Z maybe would, but I can hardly stand what I've watched in the de-evolution of communication between people as it is, watching people walk around with these ridiculous Apple goggles on, like,
yeah,
totally ignoring each other at the same table because they're in the midst of pinching some imaginary crap that's in front of them, just makes me roll my eyes. Like, I can't even, and I know everybody's like, but Bill, wait until there's sunglasses 15 years from now. And like, it's just a part of the world. Maybe by then it will be. But right now, everybody looks like an idiot. And they're not, like, this is doing nothing to bring people together. So being in an imaginary space seems weird to me.
I would wear the Apple Pro goggles on an airplane and just out. I would, because, you know, I don't even like to be in the same room sometimes as people who I meet on an airplane. But like, if you've been on an airplane lately, I sat next to this guy who had no idea of like how to share like the middle little thing on this, the armchair.
Oh, the armrest?
The armrest. I've had people like snoring and like, I mean, just, this guy, I was on a flight from, but coming back to New York, and he was like out before we took off and snoring so loud. I don't know. Sometimes people, I mean, I have this thing. Like, but just, I would put these goggles on. A little
window into Brian's world.
I mean, some people just do not have this awareness. I mean, I lived and worked in Japan for a few years. And so I think maybe this is where it comes from. Japan is incredibly thoughtful, generally speaking, to the neighbor, your surrounding area and your neighbor. So sure. Like as an idea, like you're on the subway, people are not talking out loud on their cell phones, talking out like loudly or having this public conversation that I hear everyone else here, you know, around me have. It's just not done because, you know, it's just obviously impolite and rude. People don't eat usually in front of other people while walking around and throwing their trash. There's a lot more social graces, social respect. So I'd put on these goggles on an airplane and I'd watch my movie and I'd put on the earplugs and I would just peace out. But back to McDonald's, what I like about this, what's interesting, maybe it's food for thought, is it worth focusing on such a super deep, narrow niche as anime and manga to try and light these people up and, you know, speak to them to say, McDonald's, we see you. Come on into our restaurants or eat our food or our food. Is this kind of approach in the macro level important? Or should we be just sort of targeting, you know, our core, not just such a deep, narrow niche? Do you know what I mean?
Tell me what brand, and maybe you can think of one, has done that effectively. Like, I know everybody's after growth and scale in this respect, especially large scale brands, right? You're getting up into the Hertz and the, you know, the Pepsis of the world and the rest of it. Like, you know, you're talking about millions and millions of people and trying to affect change. I haven't seen a brand that I can think of off the top of my head that's done an effective job of pivoting itself into a new category group without seemingly bending itself into a pretzel. Like, the thing that makes McDonald's work is that McDonald's has been It's been 50s style hamburger family, like get together outdoor dining, or not outdoor, but out to a restaurant dining forever. Like that's what it is. It's a thing you do with friends as, or with your family as like a treat. Like that's kind of their universe, right?
Yeah.
And that I'm loving it thing, you know, like when they start to get into this weird fringe, like, French toast breakfast. Like, in my opinion, the minute that they veer left of the hash brown, like, they start getting into a weird area. And I don't know if I want to follow them to the French toast fingers. And I'm sure that there's a group of people, but I kind of find, like, do you remember McRib, the McRib sandwich? Right. And everybody would wait for the McRib sandwich like they now wait for pumpkin spice lattes down at Starbucks, right? It was like once a year, the Grimace shake would come out, and once a year, the McRib would come out. And whether you liked it or not, all of us lined up for the McRib sandwich because it was this once a year thing. If they did it like that, it seems like they could get somewhere. But imagine now that the McRib comes in January of 2020, and then somebody at corporate says, well, now we got to have something for January 2021. So they add something else. And then the next year they do the same thing. And the next year they do the same thing. Before you know it, you've got a menu that it's not recognizable as McDonald's any longer because they've kept trying to iterate. I think brands are better to say, if I want to do that kind of distinction, then we do Honda to Acura, right? Okay, I want to go upstream. I'm not going to try what Volkswagen did with the Pantheon. Was that the name of it? I forget what the name is. I think that might be it. Anyway, the whole thing was like, I'm not going to make a $75,000 Volkswagen and try and convince people it's not an Audi. I'm going to go upstream and I'm going to do Audi, or I'm going to buy Porsche, or I'm going to do whatever. That strategy to me seems to be a lot more efficient, effective, and lasting than the idea that you can bend and flex and twist your brand to suddenly try and be things that it wasn't originally. Once you've found your niche and your groove, I kind of feel like staying on groove is a good thing.
Okay, I'll push back a little bit. But what about experimentation, Bill? Shouldn't we be experimenting with our, you know, to see if we can reach people that we didn't expect to reach? Maybe there is a whole anime, manga fan base out there that we're not capturing. Shouldn't we be experimenting?
Wouldn't it be okay then to make a McAnime concept then, which was specific to that group? I mean, we're talking about the same thing that Bud Light dealt with in a certain point of view. It's not exactly the same, but it's in the same vein enough. And, you know, if you get too far afield from your base, you're going to have some trouble with your base.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a way. My point is that I think that there's a way to do it that is effective without alienating. And I think that that experimentation can be to do outreach. And I mean, some brands have done some pretty ridiculous things. My favorite is Bic Pen doing underwear. That was my all-time favorite. Whoever decided that one was destined for the halls of fame. Or Harley Davidson doing cologne. Or, you know, all these, like the halls of oops are, you know, littered with big brands trying to reach out and do stuff that's just too far afield to make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I guess maybe the distinction for me is like brand extension, like the Harley Davidson cologne, in hindsight, seems like a terrible idea now. And what McDonald's is doing doesn't seem like a product extension as much as like, I mean, back in the day, when I was at Universal Pictures, we did a lot of like in-store activation kind of stuff. And these were like one-offs, because in my world, it was a movie title and the life cycle of the movie was very short. It was like 12 months. The movie would come out in theaters, and then in home entertainment, we would take the movie on DVD because it would be for sale and put it in the store, and you'd be able to buy it on disc at the time when people were buying DVDs. But then you'd have like 12-month life cycle before it would end up, you know, in some bargain bin at some point down the road. But we would do these in-store activations, and it would get people excited about that movie for the short amount of time. So I kind of see like the anime thing as like a little in-store activation to like, let's see if we can create a little excitement around and then fill in the blank. So like this quarter, it might be anime. Next quarter, it might be, you know, dudes who wear flannel shirts. Who knows? Like, you know,
sure.
There could be a whole flannel shirt promotion. And if you wear your flannel shirt, you might get a free, you know, medium French fries or something, you know.
Well, that could be pretty cool. Who knows? We should circle back on that and see in a couple of months after it's been out what the long-term, you know, impact is on the brand. I'd be curious to find out.
Should we introduce the B&B score? You know, Portnoy's got everyone knows the rules, one bite. But the B&B score, so we've talked about a couple of different brands. We talked about McDonald's brand right now. What score would you give McDonald's today on the B&B scale?
I would give them, on a scale of 1 to 10 on the B&B, I would give them like a solid 6, 5.5, 6. I don't think they're doing anything that's truly – their McCafe concept looks like they're trying something that's back at the home office in Chicago. And it looks like they're trying to go head-to-head with Starbucks, which I think is kind of a dumb idea. But it'll be interesting to see where that nets out. And I think this anime thing is another thing. So, I mean, you know, they're swinging and they're doing their thing. I just don't see them putting a lot of pizzazz on it. I think they are more of a product solution set. So I'd say that they're up the middle. They're a good, you know, double.
Okay. How about Wendy's?
No, Wendy's is right out. Wendy's is there are two, like they're 1.5 or 2.
Okay. Burger King. We're staying in QSR right now. Where's Burger King?
I don't even know that Burger King is on the radar right now. I mean, maybe I'd put them right at Wendy's. I'd put them at 1.5 or 2.
Here's a blast from the past. How about Carl's Jr.? Where's Carl's Jr. been? They used to.
I thought Hardee's ate them.
I mean, there's on the West Coast here. You're on the East Coast. I'm West Coast. There's Carl's Jr. everywhere. But remember what a force Carl's was back in the day? Like all those super sexy, explicit chicks in bikinis washing cars. Deep voice. We know who you are. We know what you like. You know, cut to chick in bikini washing a car with all the bubbles.
Somebody must have sent in an unhappy message, and it really like ran ragged through the hallways until somebody pulled their.
Where is Carl's Jr. and Hardee's these days? They're nowhere. They're just off the map.
These brands went the way of RC Cola. I don't know where they went. I mean, somebody's buying them somewhere, but they're obscure somewhere.
A Taco Bell's alive and kicking, but where's Del Taco? Del Taco used to have. Do you have Del Taco out there on the West? On the East
no,
West?
But when I was in Mission Viejo, I saw the Del Taco brand, and I couldn't quite get where they were trying to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's Del Taco to Taco Bell is kind of like McDonald's to Burger or Burger King to McDonald's to me. It's like they just have a drafting strategy. Oh, you like tacos?
Yeah.
There's not a Taco Bell near you? Okay, we'll just put up a Del Taco. And then
I miss the old Taco Bell. I do. I miss some Yokiro. I miss back when they were swinging. I mean, even when it was ridiculous, you know, like what does this Chihuahua have to do with anything? But it was, I don't know. They were making the right kind of noise. Like they were trying, you know, mm-hmm. This goes back to like Nissan's Dogs Love Trucks, right? Like they were just weird. I mean, they were fun and weird and experimental and just interesting to watch.
Yeah. I wonder if it has something to do with the consolidation. Like they're owned by what, Yum Brands, and Yum owns Pizza Hut, Taco Bell.
Oh no, wait a second. Pizza Hut's one. I don't think Pizza Hut is all the way in the fire out of the frying pan. I think it could be saved. I don't think that they're doing it right, but I think Pizza Hut could actually, I think that concept could actually still work. I also feel the same way about Toys R Us. I think Toys R Us could have been saved.
Okay, say more.
I just feel like they got so out of touch with who they were and what they were and where they were going that it didn't make any sense anymore. But as a brand, who were their competition? Amazon, right? Like going down to Walmart. Like they had an opportunity to do something there. They just let it become Kmart. And after that, it was like there was no, you know, it was like they just lost faith in themselves. Like you'd walk in and the employees just look like, you know, they had been trapped inside. It was Hotel California. They weren't allowed to leave. Like
yeah.
You came in and took the job and now you're here forever. You know, yeah. There was just nowhere for them to go.
Yeah. I mean, those are two super fascinating case studies to me. I mean, the Pizza Hut one, I tend to agree with you. Domino's is the clear leader here, right? Because they do the most advertising. I think it's not great advertising, but it's the most probably. And Pizza Hut hired Craig Robinson, right? The actor from The Office. Mm-hmm. I got that. Yeah. They hired Craig Robinson to do their spots. I love Craig Robinson, but it looks like he's gained 50 pounds doing these spots. Like, it's kind of unfortunate.
Maybe they paid him in pizza.
So might have.
Every day at noon, a new pie shows up.
Yeah. I mean, I could probably shed a few pounds, but.
Oh, let's not get. No. This is a fun show. We're not having responsibility, Brian. Come on.
Okay.
Taking us down the wrong path already.
But you're right. Pizza Hut. I agree. I think there's still potential there. I mean, I think generally when you're looking at an environment, you know, the brand landscape, it's not a bad thing to be number two in your market or number three in your market. You could still compete and do really, really, really well. I mean, who's number two in the pizza market right now? I think Domino's is probably number one. Who do you think is number two?
You think Domino's is number one?
In the QSR space.
Maybe.
I'm not talking about taste or quality. I'm just talking like awareness, the Q score, like who's top of mind.
I always felt like Domino's and Papa John's needed to go out back and settle it. Like I always kind of felt like, you know, the two of them were the ones that should go head to head in an after the bar brawl.
Yeah, Papa John's is gone for all intents and purposes, right? Because their founder was sort of like went through this controversy. I don't even know what, but like I think he said some things that were insensitive or politically incorrect or maybe just downright racist. I don't know what he said, but he got canceled, right? And so along with it, all the Papa John's advertising just sort of went away.
Yeah, it did. And I don't really know the backstory about that. But it wasn't something that was on my radar. But just in terms of pizza brands, and I shouldn't even talk about it because as a Chicagoan, the only pizza worth eating is Chicago pizza. That's going to get hate mail. Nonetheless, it's like those are institutions. You know, when you're in Chicago, like the five or six like pizza families are institutions and they've been there forever. It's kind of like New York. Like New York's got pizza institutions the same way. So I don't know. It's kind of hard eating pizza out of cardboard anyway. But I always felt like it was the two of them. Like Pizza Hut just disappeared. And Pizza Hut was this like weird trying to be family night out replacement to Burger King or McDonald's that kind of got lost. It was sort of like it was a hamburger party and the pizza guy showed up. You know what I mean? Like, so they got sort of like ousted at the door, like somebody's younger brother came. And so like that was just weird. And then Papa John's and Domino's came along and did their thing. And, you know, for a long time, that was strong. Little Caesars on occasion, every once in a while, I miss their old stuff. I used to work with one of the creative directors that worked on the pizza stuff. And
yeah,
she was delightful to talk to about it. Like the insights that they had and why they did the things that they did. Like, I still remember the one about the guy having the great day where he's like, you know, I found my wallet and I have a brother. And like, you know, there were all these super weirdo things that they did about, you know, 2-for-1 days. And it was just, it was great. The stuff was fun and it was playful and it was interesting and imaginative. And I really haven't seen that out of either of the other brands. You know, Papa John's better pizza, better ingredients, whatever thing was fine, up the middle, tried and true. And the Noid was really the last halfway interesting thing that I can remember seeing out of Domino's. Little Caesars, in my opinion, should have had it all over them, but they never quite seemed to get the right lift.
Yeah, I feel like they just ran out of ad dollars. Really. Yeah, like.
Well, which they were giving two pies away for one all the time. I mean, it's, you know, maybe they just, I don't know, revenued themselves right out. I don't know.
Well, here we are, Bill, back full circle, back to our, you know, are you in the commodity business or are you in the brand building business? This is probably where Pizza Hut and Little Caesars and some of these others have lost their way. They're focusing on features and benefits, whether that's like better ingredients, whatever. or Little Caesars, it was about price, you know, value, 2-for-1, whatever their deal was. And they lost their way. They forgot to talk about brand. They forgot about telling stories. They forgot about who their audience was. And now where are they? They're in the
rear
view.
But see, this is the thing, though. This is the thing that I don't think businesses realize. Everybody's attention span got 10 seconds. Do you see the Harvard study? I love this Harvard study that shows that people's attention span is now 7 seconds and at a goldfish is 8. That's messed up. But here's the thing. For the brands that are willing to go and tell stories now, it's like right after COVID when no one could make a film. Like, you're sick and tired of watching the crap films and you're dying for them to do something other than a remake of Rocket Man. Like, you just like, please don't make another. Please, God, no more Batman films. Like, please, please. We've seen every iteration, variety of Batman there is. Have an original thought. Do something. If you started telling the stories the way that they told in the 80s and 90s now, your audience would be eating out of your hand. And there are so few. So I think every brand has a super brand inside. I really do. This is why I'm still excited 32 years into the business, because I still see it the way I did. Every single brand has an opportunity. And in my humble opinion, now is as good a time as it has ever been, because there's so few good ones coming. I think that's why the Super Bowl winds up being such an important thing now, because it's the only time you're going to see anything good. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, well, I'm going to wait for the Super Bowl. What, have you ignored ads the entire year? And you ask the average person, they're like, yeah, because they're crap. But man, they're sitting there, they're excited, they're waiting to watch, they're ready to judge them. If that doesn't prove that story is still relevant, I don't know what is.